The Pop Culture Show is presented by Luna Nuda Prosecco. Cheers with Luna Nuda. It's a pop culture show, a deep dive into the latest celebrity news, music, TV, celebrity interviews, technology. We kind of throw a little bit of everything in. We're your hosts. I'm Barnes. That is Leslie.
Hello.
Hey, Leslie. Look, there's Cubby.
Hi. How are you? Is Leslie mad at me, by the way? You're not mad at me, are you?
Alpha Kenny One.
Listen, I had someone come to my defense on Facebook.
Yeah, one person.
Stop picking on me.
One person. Keep picking. That's what makes the world go round. That was pretty classic. And apparently you still don't know what it means, is what
my husband had to tell me this morning.
Well,
thanks
if
a
it
lot,
makes you
guys.
Feel better, I've done it to friends over the past year or so, and most of my friends just don't end up getting it, and I have to explain it to them.
You have to just say the actual words.
Right. But I appreciate you being a good sport.
Yeah. She was a good sport. It was kind of funny.
I don't have a dirty mind.
Yeah, that was proof.
So, proven. Hello.
That's proof, yes.
Yeah. Very much proven. Okay, today our guest, Leslie, has outdone us. We were boasting a couple of weeks ago about how we brought number one artists to the show. Leslie has brought a multiple number one artist today on the show, Jewel. Yes.
She's amazing.
I'm very excited.
Celebrating the 25th anniversary of Pieces of You. Can you believe it's been 25 years?
No.
And we were all there in the beginning with her. I think we were all like just there as she grew.
She is a top fiver to the core. She looks the same.
She looks amazing. She has like become like a best-selling author. It's amazing her career, what she's done.
Children's music too.
Yes.
All these people at some point do that.
If you hang out with Jewel's family, are you hanging out with the family Jewels?
No, I think it's just the family Jewel.
You saved up for that.
Yeah. No.
Where's the rim shot?
Yeah, ba-doom, boom. He'll put it in there. Barnes will put a rim shot in there. Hey, don't forget, head to our Instagram for VIP access to exclusive video content, the only place to get video exclusives. And beginning today, you can watch the entire Rain Maida interview on our Instagram. So check it out. Again, it's The Pop Culture Show on Instagram.
We've been putting a lot of reels out, and those things, Instagram is giving favor to those. Those things are getting, it's unbelievable how many plays they get.
I like reels.
Yeah, the one of you, Cubby, has tons of views. The one that we just put up, it was like you didn't know where you were. That whole thing.
Memory test. I had a lot of comments about that. Yeah.
Queen's Gambit.
Right. My sister hit me up on that, and she goes, "Oh, that was a very funny promo. By the way, what's the Queen's Gambit?"
And I had to
explain. Yeah, she's a little behind on like stuff to watch. Even I'm more caught up than my sister. Yes.
Well, that whole Rain Maida interview is fun, and you can watch it on our IGTV right now. And it was their anniversary, I guess, on Saturday, Chantal and Rain, and they were all driving around. And
I saw that.
And they posted a selfie and said something about how in love they were, and it was from the car. And I commented, "Is that the love leaf?" Because, you know, he's in his electric car.
He drives a leaf.
And he's like, haha, LOL, no, it's not. It looks like a bigger automobile.
By the way, in that interview, I mean, major tease. We played a clip of some new music from Our Lady Peace.
It was really good.
Really good. Yeah.
You know, I failed to mention, by the way, on Instagram, we got the big blue check. We are verified now. The Pop Culture Show on Instagram. How did that happen?
I don't know. I guess, does that mean we're legit all of a sudden?
I don't know. Barnes, who did you pay?
I didn't pay anyone.
That was
impressive. That's the most impossible thing to happen on the planet. I've got people DMing us saying how you do it. And I said, there's no answer.
Yeah.
Have no idea.
Congratulations, guys.
Be careful of scammers out there, too, because scammers will tell other people that they, you know,
that you can pay.
I paid them to verify me when that wasn't the case.
It doesn't work that
careful.
Way.
No.
It doesn't work that way. So we're giving away also stuff. We're giving away either the Pop Culture Show t-shirt or the Pop Culture Show coffee mug. And all you have to do is leave us a 5-star review. We'll pick a random review to read on the air. I've got one right here.
Nice.
And then we will send directly to your door. Whichever one you choose, the t-shirt or the mug, and just go to Apple, leave a 5-star, and then write like this. Here's one coming out of Brooklyn. This must be a Cubby
fan.
Listener.
All right.
Here's the review. I really didn't want to like this show because the last thing I needed was another podcast to try and fit in every week. But my nostalgia for the Morning X eagerly brought me to the Pop Culture Show, and it does not disappoint. The commentary, the dynamics between Barnes, Leslie, and Cubby, and the weekly content are so relatable. You laugh, you will roll your eyes, and you will joyfully yell expletives at Cubby. Go ahead and subscribe.
What?
You know you want to.
Is and this that a friend is, of Cubby's?
This is more proof that I really don't need to be on this show. You guys would be fine without me.
Stop it.
You know,
Are you going to try and quit again and then just get this whole thing going sideways?
Who's this from?
Brooklyn Sasso.
Brooklyn from Brooklyn?
Oh, Brooklyn Says So. I guess say that's so. That's what they're going for. So, hey, Brooklyn Says So. Send us an email, info@thepopcultureshow.com with all your info. And we will send you which thing you want, the t-shirt or the coffee mug. And thank you for your review. We'd appreciate it if you go to Apple and do that. That would be fantastic.
Leslie, did you get your mug yet from Barnes? Because I've yet to get my mug.
I was going
to
say, we have the Pop Culture Show t-shirt, but I haven't seen a mug.
Did you write a review?
I'm going to write a review just to get the mug.
Exactly.
Cubby's trying to quit. Like, you can't quit and walk out the door with a parting gift, with a mug.
Are you trying to get a raise? Is this like a negotiation?
I swear I'm kidding about the whole quitting thing, but I do sometimes, I'm not going to lie, I feel like a third wheel because there's so much 99X love with you guys. And
well,
I'm,
that person's in Brooklyn, and they saved the last mention for Cubby.
But they clearly said I was looking for some 99X nostalgia, so I don't know.
How bad is that, though? You got people in Brooklyn listening to 99X. You do your job. You listen. You keep your people in your fence.
That's true. Yeah, you're right.
Cubby, you put that out there, and now I'm all worried.
Yeah, why? Ease up, people. Everyone needs to calm
down.
You're
like acting like you might leave us.
No. I'm actually really kidding, but I mean, there's a lot of like people that love you guys together. And that's why
love
I think
you
if
too.
I appreciate that, and you're very kind, and I love doing the show, but honestly, guys, if I wasn't here, would anybody care?
Not true.
He's a little needy today. Just
can
a little
anybody,
needy.
In fact, can anybody name a feature that I did for about, I don't know, 2 months on this show that I stopped doing?
Me? Can we name it? Or are you asking listeners?
Leslie, do you remember the feature I used to do and I stopped doing it?
Yeah, why did you stop doing that?
Because it kept getting cut.
Well, you do like this year in history and...
Leslie didn't even notice.
What are you talking about?
Well, a lot of people didn't notice, which I don't
mean
care.
This is Cubby's Pop Culture Throwback, a rewind into the vault of music, movies, and moments.
Right.
Why aren't we doing that anymore?
We ran out of moments.
Oh. We ran out of moments.
It was usually at the end of the show, and our show has grown so much with these big interviews, and it just, a lot of times we didn't have time for it, and it took me like 20 minutes, which I know is not long, to get it ready to go each week. So I was like, you know what? It gets cut a lot. Screw it. You know,
but
we're done.
We've done a lot of things like that that we're just trying out. We're new. We're a new podcast.
Yeah.
Right. We are. But we are growing.
But I did like that segment.
Well, maybe I'll bring it back.
If we could change the true crime, we could really kill it.
I know.
No pun intended.
Exactly.
I mean, seriously, those shows, they keep coming like nobody's business. And to be honest, I would not argue. I mean, if we change this to true crime, I would be very happy.
What if one of us murder somebody and then
and then
we
the
start
other
talking
two reap
about
the
it.
Benefit from the podcast, right?
Yeah.
All these docuseries on Netflix, I'm like hooked on all of them. Then Barnes told me about another one I have to watch.
Well, let's get into it. How was your week? That's where you talk about it. Perfect timing.
I note to self, stop watching movies about serial killers before you go to bed. I finally watched that one with Zac Efron that Netflix did last year about Ted Bundy. Did you ever see that?
That was about Ted Bundy?
Yeah, Zac Efron played Ted Bundy.
Oh, no, I didn't see
it
that.
It really centered around this book that one of his girlfriends wrote and how good looking he was. And it's like when he was in court, all these women would show up just because they thought he was good looking and they, you know, didn't believe he did any of this. You should watch it. It's really good. But just don't watch it at night.
And I heard Zac played his character was really right on as far as looks go.
Yeah, he did. If you go back and you can see, you know, true footage, real footage of the actual court documents. Yep. Zac did a great job.
I saw by your posts that you both watched the Bee Gees. I'm glad you took my recommendation. That was a stellar doc.
I think I'll watch it again. That's how good it was.
You learn so much.
You learn a lot.
Some people think you need HBO Max to get it, and you can watch it on HBO Max, but my sister found it on one of the regular HBOs, so it's playing on HBO. Yeah, yeah.
That's good to know.
Because I told her to watch it, and she goes, I don't have HBO Max. And then a day later, she's like, you know what? I'm going to see if I have it. And she has one of those talking remote controls where you can talk into it. And she was like, Bee Gees. And then it showed up on the HBO they had. So
they only have
cool.
some exclusives that are just Max. I keep it. You know how it's so easy to dump a service. You have it for a month and you binge something. I keep finding shows. I started watching this cop show called Southland. Have you ever watched that?
I've heard of it, but
there's 4 or 5 seasons on HBO. It's on HBO Max, I guess. So I'm watching that. So they've got me in.
Yeah, they have me in as well.
I love with the Bee Gees how they explained like how Jive Talking, the beat, how they got the beat for Jive Talking from driving over a road every day.
That was
over a bridge, yeah.
And how they did Staying Alive. I mean, that loop they did was Staying Alive, and then they added the guitar and the bass line. It was just really cool to see the old producers talking about all that.
About how they just basically did a loop. Like, yeah. It wasn't a technical thing. It was like they literally did it in the room with like weird configurations of tape machines.
And yeah, Barnes, really I was cool. with you about the whole Eric Clapton making that recommendation of them to come and record in Miami to get a whole new sound. That was fascinating.
And just to get that nasally, you know, there's like, you can sing in this high voice, do it. And then look what happens. I mean, they basically define an entire segment of music.
So guys, I had two amazing things happen to me this week and one bad thing. The first amazing thing is I'm officially on the Leslie Fram Christmas card list.
Yeah.
Which made my day. Yeah.
Thank you.
Did you get a limited edition?
Wait, did I write something?
You sure did. You sure did. You wrote Cubby, Coco, and Naomi wishing you a joyful, peaceful holiday. I hope we can all see each other very soon in 2021. And then love, Leslie and Lanny. So this was very sweet. It's a beautiful card. Got the dog. Got the snow on the trees. Mm-hmm, you got the farm. And I just want to let you know, we always do Christmas cards this year, but this is the first year we're not. So don't be offended because we've had
offended.
A lot on our plate this year. So Barnes, you're not getting one either.
Well, Cubby, you asked me the other day, is Leslie mad at me? Does Leslie like me? Well, I didn't get writing on my credit card. My card.
Oh, I didn't write on your card?
My Christmas card is blank. I just I got right out of the Vistaprint. I think it went straight from Vistaprint to my house.
Well, saying. You know what? You guys have known each other for years. Uh-oh. You know, this was the first card I've ever gotten from Leslie, so...
And I did talk about that too. Barnes, I am so sorry. And maybe it's because we spent so much time together this year, Barnes.
I sent Cubby a new certificate, $500 in tech service for the year. Again, that's what I give him every year.
Well, that's right. The quality of work and the questions I ask throughout the year would add up to about $500 worth of work. Yeah. Exactly. Thank you.
Barnes Apple Genius Bar. We ordered Cubby a new computer this week.
Yep. Lighting, everything.
Yep. It's all coming
No
in.
More slowing down, baby. I got the 2 terabyte coming. The one piece of bad news we got, I'll keep this brief, on Tuesday, December 15th, we were supposed to have major surgery for our daughter. Naomi was supposed to have cleft palate surgery because those that don't know, she has a hole in the roof of her mouth. Yeah, so the last 2 months have been focused on December 15th. Let's get to December 15th. Let's get to it because it is a major surgery and two doctors are involved, including an ear doctor. We get a call Monday night from the hospital saying that the insurance has been denied. And the surgery is canceled.
What?
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Insurance is denied.
Our whole life collapsed. So long story short, Cigna Insurance says, we didn't get the paperwork done in time. The doctor's office is saying, no, we sent it in a long time ago within the proper amount of time. Come to find out, the doctor kind of messed up and they should have put it in at a certain date and they didn't do it. They were very apologetic. The surgery now is going to happen first week of January. But you know when you just move your world around this one date and you just want this to happen and it doesn't? It really, because we want to get this behind us and be done with it because after the surgery, she's going to be in pain, obviously, and she has to wear these things they call no-nos where her arms are going to have to stick straight out because they don't want her to put her hand in her mouth with stitches.
Yeah.
So everybody says that's the hardest part. The pain is actually going to go away in a couple of days when she has to sleep with these sticks on her hand.
Oh,
so we just want to get
so
it over
sorry,
with.
I'm so sorry, Cubby.
No, it's all good. I mean, I'm glad the surgery is actually going to happen now, but it's just, you know, we were hoping like right now would be recovery.
Now you
When's
have to wait
to
a whole other month. He said January.
Right.
Oh, January.
Yeah, early January, exactly. But anyway, but this made my week. This turned things around. Have you guys seen the Smokey Robinson cameo video that went viral?
Unbelievable.
Yes.
I could not believe it.
Yes.
Okay.
Seriously. Watching it, you're like, what?
And I love Smokey so much.
Yeah, you've met him. I've never met him. I heard he's a great guy. But I literally went from tears crying about my daughter on Monday night to tears crying of laughter on Tuesday. So a guy by the name of Jeff Jacobson tweeted out. He goes, my mom grew up on the same street as Smokey Robinson in Detroit. So for Hanukkah, I wanted to reunite them via cameo. But the video takes a strange twist. Of course, Cameo is an app where you can book celebrities to send greetings to you or friends. And Smokey Robinson sent a greeting, and this is what happened.
stick with this. The old adage of wait for it has never applied more than right here. Just listen.
This is Smokey Robinson. I know you didn't expect to hear from me, but I was contacted by your sons, Jeff and Jerry. And they wanted me, they told me that you used to live in Detroit across the street from me. And gosh, that's beautiful. How are you doing again? Nice talking to you again, I guess. But anyway, you're living in Vancouver now. And they wanted me to wish you happy Chinooka. I have no idea what Chinooka is, but happy Chinooka because they said so. Anyway, God bless you, babe, and enjoy Chinooka. Have a wonderful time.
It's priceless.
You know, it's hard to be upset at him, though. I think he's a sweet old dude. Didn't have any idea.
I wonder, has he commented on this?
He said... He already commented. He said, I wish I could have a do-over. And SNL even had a Smokey Robinson, like, you know, a fake Smokey Robinson on Weekend Update talking about it. But yeah, this went viral. I'm sorry. It's just, I've listened to it and watched it maybe 20 times.
It's classic. Because you don't see it coming.
You don't see it coming. Right. I had the privilege of meeting him. We did a CMT Crossroads with Smokey Robinson and this amazing vocalist, Cam, this country artist, Cam. And he is old school professional. When he puts the Smokey jacket on and he gets on that stage, he is Smokey Robinson and he sounds phenomenal.
Wanna get intimate? Subscribe to The Pop Cult at thepopcultureshow.com and get VIP insider access to the show with bonus content, exclusive videos and freebies. Anything happening on the show will come to you first. Sign up free and join the pop cult at thepopcultureshow.com.
I forgot to mention earlier, I was looking at all of our, when we were talking about reviews, I was looking at our week. You can pull up a sheet and see where everybody is listening. And thank you, by the way, for listening all around the world. My question is, we have people listening, and this is as recent as last week, in these countries. If this is you, we just want to know why. Like, honestly, why do you listen to this American podcast? This is not a joke. This is just curiosity. If you are listening in Germany, India, Spain, Norway, Italy, or Chile, if you're listening right now in one of those countries, because I know you listened last week, there are a lot of people from those countries that listened. We're just trying to figure out what the hell for. Like, do you just like American humor? Or are you an American that may live there? Are you an expat? It's just more curiosity than anything. Film a little video of yourself, like a selfie, and say hi. We'd like to just put you on the show and say, you know, why do you listen? How did you find us? Don't you find that interesting that these countries, some of them not English speaking?
I think a lot of it is they love celebrity. They love American celebrity.
Maybe. Yeah. They like to hear the celebrity sleaze. But if that is you, please send it to us. info@thepopcultureshow.com. Take a video, you know, let's see outside. Let's see where you are. Cause that's just intriguing to me that we have this crazy global audience that for some reason listens to the Pop Culture Show, but thank you.
So guys, I did want to mention Luna Nuda Prosecco because we did a social distancing celebration with our neighbors the other night in Nashville. And guess what I took over?
So good.
A bottle of Luna Nuda Prosecco. Seriously did.
Yeah.
And so it's really great for the holidays or, you know, toasting the new year, sitting around the dinner table with your family. And by the way, a last minute great hostess gift, which I sort of did with my neighbors the other night. So you can give it to coworkers, neighbors. Great celebrating in 2020 with Luna Nuda Prosecco.
And you can win a pop culture t-shirt from Luna Nuda Prosecco with our cheater trivia that's on all of our social outlets. Just look for the post and put the answer to the question, which is very simple. What is it called when you open a bottle of champagne with a sword? That's it. What's it called when you open a bottle of champagne with a sword? We'll pick one random correct answer and that person will win a pop culture t-shirt or coffee mug courtesy of Luna Nuda Prosecco. You know, next month, I'll show you the sponsor. I'll give you a little heads up. It's right above my shoulder on this fancy bar that they've set up from Blue Ridge Distributors.
Ooh.
Next month is Purity Vodka.
It says organic, too. I love the word organic.
And as you notice, it's the one prop on the shelf that has a lot missing. we're taking care of our sponsors.
We took a nice twist, by the way, with our sponsors. You know, gone the alcohol route, which I really like.
I knew you would not have a problem with it.
Time for celebrity sleaze and probably the biggest story not only of this week, but of the last several months, is the meltdown that Tom Cruise had on the set of Mission Impossible, where he just goes off on the crew about COVID-19 protocols.
So good in a bad way. Like, you've heard these stories about Tom Cruise forever.
You've heard about his temper, and a lot of celebrities came out and said, hey, we agree with him because, you know, this shuts down, definitely shuts down production. It hurts people's livelihoods, but the audio is sort of shocking because it kind of gets worse and worse.
Well, you can't, if you're Tom Cruise, you can't be the deliverer of this message. The message is 100% correct, but you can't be the guy to do it in this age. First thing I would have said is put your phones on the table. I have an announcement.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't think any adult should yell at another adult like that. I think what you're saying is right, Barnes. I agree that he should be fed up because this is a business trying to get up and running again. But he should. I just don't think an adult should talk to another adult like this.
Well, he has a mask on. First of all, he's talking to a group, a big room of people. So, I mean, he's yelling, but he's exhibiting passion, which is coming through as anger, because right. It is. I'm just saying, for PR reasons, he shouldn't be the guy even having that conversation.
And by the way, it happened a second time, and there is no audio for the second explosion, but apparently 5 or more people have already quit because of this rant.
Have a listen. This is long. It's a couple of minutes long.
Okay.
But I think you need to hear the whole thing and put yourself in the perspective of mentally, think about this. This is Tom Cruise up in front of a group of people doing this. It's wild when you take your mind to, you know, I just picture like some warehouse probably where they're doing a scene, you know, and everyone's like about to do whatever. And then this happens.
We are the gold standard. You're back here in Hollywood making movies right now because of us. Because they believe in us and what we're doing. I'm on the phone with every studio at night. Insurance companies, producers, and they're looking at us and using us to make their movies. We are creating thousands of jobs, you I don't ever want to see it again, ever. And if you don't do it, you're fired. And I see you do it again, you're gone. And anyone on this crew does it, that's it. And you too.
It's wild that he's calling people out directly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pointing to them. And it's a little scary.
This whole thing. It is scary. And again, he has a mask on. That's why it sounds muffled.
Do it again. That's it. No apologies. You can tell it to the people that are losing their homes because our industry is shut down. It's not going to put food on their table or pay for their college education. That's what I sleep with every night. The future of the industry. So I'm sorry, I'm beyond your apologies. I have told you, and now I want it. And if you don't do it, you're out. We are not shutting this movie down! Is it understood? If I see it again, you're gone. And so are you. So you're going to cost him his job. And I see it on the set, you're gone. And you're gone. That's it. Am I clear? Do you understand what I want? Do you understand the responsibility that you have? Because I will deal with your reason. And if you can't be reasonable, and I can't deal with your logic, you're fired. That's it. That is it. I trust you guys to be here. That's it.
Dang.
I mean, that's a tongue lashing.
That's Barnes when Leslie and I have tech issues. Talking to us.
That's pretty incredible. That shows you how much money is on the line with these productions, especially with that one. And one hiccup and that thing is shut down.
I think Tom is on edge too, because it's the seventh Mission Impossible. Wrap it up.
So what I was telling you guys a little bit earlier is that Leah Remini, who is a former Scientologist, spoke up about this rant. She said, I think it's time for people to start waking up to the real facts here. Tom has for years manipulated his image to be a good guy. And she goes on and on to say, this is the real Tom Cruise.
Heard that a lot.
It's so hard to hear that. So Barnes, I actually took some of your recommendations on some movies to watch. Loved on Disney Plus, loved the movie Safety.
So good.
Safety is about the football player from Clemson who has to take in his little brother and kind of hide his little brother in his dorm because his mom is in rehab. And then the NCAA definitely changes some rules. It's such a heartwarming, and I love the fact that it's a real story. It's true.
Perfect family holiday movie, and it's wild to see him advertise it during the Clemson-Notre Dame massacre.
Yeah.
It's just wild, the Clemson game, and then you see the little Clemson ad come up.
Right.
Last night I watched, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago or a couple of months ago on the Pop Culture Show about Chadwick Boseman and the new movie coming out that he's in with Viola Davis, Ma Rainey's Black Bottom Blues. I watched last night. The acting is extraordinary. I would not be surprised if he gets an Oscar nomination for this movie, along with Viola Davis.
You're definitely our drama department. You really go deep into these dramas.
Yeah,
these really like quiet dramas with no soundtracks and stuff.
It's, and then remember I asked you guys to watch Hillbilly Elegy. Have you watched it yet?
I haven't gotten to it yet. No.
Okay, this is the one that Ron Howard directed. It's based on a true story about J.D. Vance, this guy that ends up going to Yale. But, you know, he overcomes a crazy childhood. Again, Glenn Close transforms herself, as well as Amy Adams. Another great movie to watch on Netflix.
As soon as I get 90 Day Fiancé finished, I'll get on that Hillbilly Elegy. I'm in the reality department. That's my job.
You are. It's so funny. Well, listen, this show covers everything. And one more, kind of another one where you get the hometown hero guy that ends up screwing up and then he comes back home. This is called The Last Champion. And Cole Hauser's in it. This guy is also from Yellowstone. He plays Rip. Another good one. He is a high school wrestler. And it's his story about coming home and, again, redeeming himself.
Check out The Accusation on Netflix. I think you'll both like that one. It's a four-parter. It's Room 2308, The Accusation. It's a true story that happened in New York at the Sofitel. Isn't that where you lived, Cubby? No, what was that hotel?
I lived in a downtown hotel that was after, I'm drawing a blank.
That had condos at the top. It was a Miami. Okay. Satay, that's right.
The Satay. I don't know what. Yeah, now it's 40 Broad Street.
It's about a guy running for president. He was going to be the next president of France, mm-hmm. and he ended up raping a maid in New York City.
I remember that story.
It's a wild story.
Totally remember that story. Have you seen all the stories about Dave Chappelle? Now HBO Max is going to cut the Chappelle Show. He kind of went off a few weeks ago about Comedy Central. He said, I'm here to tell you Comedy Central gave me a raw deal just because I'm black. I believe not because I'm black, but they gave me a raw deal because I was like 28 years old. This industry is a monster. Apparently he signed a bad deal and people have been running the Chappelle Show for years. And when he went off, now they're all going, okay, we won't run the show anymore. So you probably won't see it anywhere.
He gets angry so easy.
Like me?
Yeah.
You mean like
Tom
Cruise?
You guys are related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really get angry. I just get frustrated sometimes. But yeah, I mean, you think he's so loaded, though, he can afford having them take it off?
Or do you think
he's going to try to get a better deal?
I think he's going to try to get a better deal that he signed a really bad deal.
He's never happy, though.
Now, here's a docuseries I know we're all going to want to watch. Lily James, by the way, I think she's a great actress, and Sebastian Stan are going to play Pamela Anderson and Tommy Lee. Wow.
That's a little late for that, isn't it?
I don't know. Well, a lot of people might not know their story. Yeah, you have the real movie,
yeah.
Right?
On VHS in 1999.
Yeah.
Do you think it's a little late for that?
30 years? Bit. I mean, who cares anymore?
Well, wait. Bee Gees. One of the biggest documentaries out there right now.
And,
we're watching
and also
that.
one of the biggest bands ever. Third biggest selling band in the history of music versus
Well, there's big things
Tommy
in this
Lee.
Video too.
Yeah, I don't know. I would see a Tommy Lee, like a thing about his life, but not just about that part of it.
Yeah, I think it hits a whole new generation that don't know, like the Bee Gees, that don't know about the infamous Tommy Lee and Pam.
I guess so.
Guess who was the number one celeb on social media in 2020? I can
gotta
see
be a
this.
Kardashian.
It
An
says
actor?
In the category of top primetime series talent. Katy Perry. 16.3 oh, wow. million engagements. I guess, you know, Idol and then having the baby and stuff.
Yeah,
I thought it was kind
yeah.
of interesting. Let's see. Also ranking high on that list, Nick Jonas from when he was on The Voice. And Jennifer Lopez. Because, you know, J-Lo's everywhere. I love yeah. J-Lo. I thought this was rather interesting, and I don't know if I would listen or not, but Netflix is testing out audio-only options for mobile.
I saw that.
Would you, like, listen to 6 episodes of The Queen's Gambit and not be able to visually see it? I don't know.
Visually was what no. that was all about. This seems like a really much... It's not. It's one thing to do a Dateline
yeah.
that you can
right.
actually... But yeah, something like
a true crime,
yeah.
like with all the podcasts that are popular. But yeah, not for a, can you imagine watching? No, it didn't make sense to watch a TV show and not be able to see it.
All My Children is going to be on Prime Time, a sequel series. Kelly Ripa and her husband, Mark Consuelos, have a production company and they're actually going to be producing this.
I can't believe they gave her the rights for that. That's, I mean, she must have bought it, but yeah, she hasn't had great luck in Prime Time. It'll be interesting to see. It sounds like it's going to be kind of like Dynasty. Like that type of
soapy kind of
yeah nighttime drama.
Yeah. I'm very excited that the first photos of Eddie Murphy and Arsenio Hall in Coming to America 2. Are you excited
about
that?
Some of those scenes are so classic in that first one.
That is one movie that if I see it on, if I'm channel flipping, I stop. I mean, it's just so funny.
It is so funny. Couple of other movie updates. The Batman, apparently the new one with Robert Pattinson, is going to be rated R. This is like the first time a Batman movie has been rated R, coming in 2022. Eddie Van Halen, his ashes will be spread on the beaches of Malibu.
I thought you were going to say Panama.
No.
That would have been
and
good.
And Barnes would have fired up the song.
Dun, dun, dun.
Woo! The cost of COVID. I saw this story and couldn't believe it. It cost Mark Wahlberg $400,000 to quarantine in Australia. Yeah, he got, you had to get government permission to do that because usually when you go there, you have to stay in a hotel for several weeks and self-isolate. Well, no, he didn't. He hit $400,000. He's, by the way, Barnes, he's in Australia to film an ad for an online betting company that he's putting together.
Nice work. That's what's coming through now with all the latest auditions.
Yeah.
That you're going to get paid a full week to sit on your ass. I have not booked one of those yet, but cannot wait.
Yeah. Apparently he quarantined with the crew starting at $2,500 a night. Normally when he's home, he has two police officers, obviously, to make sure he is safe at all times. There's also a private ambulance on standby for Mark and his crew, including extras, in addition to all the other amenities. So it must be nice to be able to just drop $400K.
Yeah, my deal was not exactly the same. Mine was a bottle of Purity vodka and internet. Those are my two requirements. But you do get paid for the full week, which is pretty incredible.
Here's a movie that I will not be watching. Chris Pine is going to star in a Dungeons & Dragons movie. Finally, a Dungeons & Dragons movie. I can see Chris Pine in that, but it's definitely not something I'm interested in.
All the nerds in elementary school were playing that. I remember I would be playing like football or dodgeball, and then there'd be like 8 nerds in the corner just sitting there playing Dungeons and Dragons.
No thanks.
So are you ready to watch Wonder Woman 1984?
I kind of want
Can't
to.
Wait.
Christmas Day. I want to watch it as well.
I'm in.
Yeah.
From
in.
The comfort of your home, right?
I love from the... Listen, I may never go into a theater again. It's really...
I'm with
it really
you.
Is nice.
Guess what's getting a reboot? Fantasy Island
on
Fox.
I saw this.
It was on Fox from 1977 to 1984.
And it's reimagined.
Yeah. I don't know
it's
what it's
definitely
be like.
Not. Heather just asked me last night. She's like, because we ran out of shows. No offense, Hillbilly Elegy. I just haven't gotten there yet. But we were seriously talking about 90 Day Fiance. Like, should we watch that? And then she's like, what shows made you happy when you were a kid? It's like, first thing out of my mouth, Fantasy Island, Love Boat,
yeah.
all those stupid Saturday night shows. But this is going to be a completely Fox-sized Fantasy Island. It's going to be... I don't know.
Heather's right, though. They're tapping into the whole nostalgia thing during a pandemic. People are like, you know, reverting back to nostalgia and things that make them feel good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fantasy Island and then was it Love Boat and Fantasy Island back to back on
Saturday
night? I think
so on Saturday night. Yeah.
Because I remember Friday night was banging because you had Dukes of Hazzard followed by Incredible Hulk. But then I had to go to bed because Dallas would come on. And that's when Mom would turn on Dallas.
Oh, right. I would watch Hulk, but also $6 Million Man. And yeah, then that was Bionic Woman. Mm-hmm. All that stuff. That was some great TV.
Reboot. A couple of headlines. Kelly Clarkson's talk show, which, by the way, I think she does a great job, has been renewed. Elton John named Global Citizen Artist of the Year for all the work that he does, obviously, with the Elton John AIDS Foundation. I thought this was cool, and I looked and couldn't find how much it would be, but there's going to be a Led Zeppelin-themed pinball machine. But I
couldn't find, already?
I couldn't find out how much it was. No, it's available now.
I thought there was a Stairway to Heaven one.
I have a friend in the pinball business, and I bought a pinball machine from him like 15 years ago. And I got to ask him, I might be able to get one for us.
Find out how much that is.
Yeah.
We were talking about biopics earlier. There is one in the works for Whitney Houston. I'll definitely watch that. What a tragic life she had.
Bobby Brown, tragic life he's having.
Yeah. And you know, and another sequel, Billy Madison, which I think would be great with Adam Sandler. I mean, come on.
I loved Billy Madison.
I don't think he's ever done like a movie sequel, but this one should be like right up our alley. Here are the highest paid celebs. This is ranked by Forbes, highest paid celebrities for the year. And by the way, if there are some names on here that you don't know, it means they're soccer players. So number 10, okay. The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, $87 million at number 10. LeBron James at 9, $88 million. Howard Stern. At number 8, $90 million.
Was not that too shabby?
Yeah, I know.
Damn.
Is it Neymar? Is that a soccer player? At number 7, at $95.5 million. Tyler Perry. Love Tyler Perry. He's at number 6 with $97 million. Lionel Messi. Must be a soccer player. $104 million at 5. Cristiano Ronaldo, $105 million at number
Definitely
4.
Soccer.
Roger Federer. Tennis player, 106. 106 at number 3. Number 2, Kanye West, $170 million. And of course, number 1,
Kardashian.
Yeah. Kylie Jenner.
Kylie.
$590 million. She sold her cosmetics company.
I was reading where Kylie spends $350,000 a week on security.
I would believe that.
Right? 20 people involved. Mm-hmm. Amazing.
Crazy life they lead. You made me think of something, a show I forgot to tell you both, Ted Lasso.
Yeah, you know what? Friends of mine are raving about Ted Lasso.
Oh my gosh.
I have got to see it. Apple TV.
I cannot stand soccer, so I'll put that out there first. I just don't get it, never have. Love this show. Both Heather and I are watching it and laughing our asses off. It is so well done. Funny, really funny.
That may be the next one I get into.
Cubby, you may like it.
Well, I'll get to it probably in 2022.
Better watch out what you put on social media. I mean, Cardi B is apologizing for hosting this Thanksgiving with her 37 family members. I mean, come on. She wrote on Twitter, 12 kids and 25 adults over the holidays. It was lit. And then, of course, you know, the backlash starts. So be careful over the holidays what you post.
All right, Jules coming up in a couple of minutes. Wanted to hit, because we're at the end of the year, quickly the top Google searches, the top 10 Google searches of 2020. Have you seen this list already?
No.
No.
It's interesting to see how things fall out. I mean, think about this. This is U.S. only. Top Google searches. 10, PlayStation 5. 9, Chadwick Boseman. 8, Naya Rivera. Who is winning the election? That term was 7. Zoom was 6.
People trying to figure it out, probably.
Yeah.
Coronavirus symptoms, 5.
Ooh, I thought that would be number 1.
I would have guessed higher.
Me too.
Coronavirus update, 4. Kobe Bryant, 3. Mm-hmm. What do you think number 1 was? I haven't told you 2 or 1 yet. What do you think 1 was?
Like a presidential election kind of thing?
Bingo. Election results. Go Fram.
Well,
number 2 was just coronavirus by itself.
Number 1 should
You're on mute. You're on mute should be on there somewhere.
Yeah, also,
I think people Google that all the time. You're on mute. Yeah, that's the most popular phrase of 2020. You're on mute, dude.
Where is 2020 sucks?
I don't know.
That should be on there.
They haven't broken into categories. I'll just hit you a couple of other number ones. People, Joe Biden. Babies, Elon Musk baby. Athletes, Ryan Newman. News, election results. Actors, Tom Hanks. How to cut men's hair at home.
There's Lobie.
There's a pandemic year. Yeah. How to help? How to help Australia fires? People, words they don't know what they mean. WAP.
Yeah, they Happy actually. Chinooka. That's been a big topic with a lot of people. And what about where's
you know what WAP? You know what it means?
Yeah, go ahead, Cubby.
WAP. It's a wet ass pussy, isn't it?
No, he just comes right out and says it.
Well, it's Cardi B song, right?
I'm assuming that it's from Cardi B, and that's why it's there.
And by the way, where is on the Google search the best new podcast, The Pop Culture Show? Where's that?
Number two. We're almost
You know
there.
What word I think should be in there is reboot.
Yeah.
So many reboots in 2020. Mm-hmm. You know?
Get exclusive video content when you follow The Pop Culture Show on Instagram. Unlock full video interviews and video bits you can't get anywhere else. Instagram.com/The Pop Culture Show.
Arguably an artist we could do a 20-part series with because she is a successful singer, songwriter, producer, author. The list goes on and on. She's had multiple number ones. She has reissued one of the best albums of our generation. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jewel.
Yeah.
Hi, guys. Nice to see you. Really nice to see everybody. I've known you all for a long time. We're all still here.
Yeah, Leslie, you did good. Good
it's
job.
Jewel, it is unbelievable, though, because when we were, Barnes and Cubby and I were talking about where do we even begin, because you have, you've accomplished and conquered many things in your career.
It's fun. You know, I've always really enjoyed being the dark horse, and I seemed to put myself in that position over and over because I would switch genres, I would switch formats, and it was like starting over. You know, as you guys know in radio, our familiarity scores, if people don't know how songs test, but, you know, they kind of test through, you know, they call people's houses and go, touch tones, you remember that? And it'd be like, yeah. Does this song sound familiar to you? On a scale of one to five, how passionate are you about this artist? I mean, that's how songs were tested. And I don't know how much has changed, but I never struck high on the familiarity scores because Hands didn't sound like Cool Save Your Soul and et cetera, throughout my whole career. So I was always committed to starting from scratch every single record.
You said it's fun. Here's a weird question. Is fame fun? I know the art of making, you know, your art, which can be writing or music or whatever, but is the fame part fun?
I think, you know, kids have it backwards. They want to be famous, and so they learn to be musicians or influencers or whatever. But that's really backwards. To me, fame is the price you pay to do what you love. I don't particularly find it fun. Not that I would ever sit here and say I'm ungrateful for it.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not saying that at all. I mean, just
but, and no, part. It's not the fun part of the job.
Right.
You know, at all. It's the price you pay. And you're lucky to get there for sure.
Does 25 years, it's been 25 years since your first album. Does it seem like 25 years ago or does it seem like last week?
You know, it seems like 5 minutes underwater. No, I'm kidding. in some ways, it feels like 5 minutes. In other ways, it feels like 50 years, 50 lifetimes. You know, I think about that 18-year-old kid. You know, I was living in a car because I wouldn't have sex with a boss. I was terrified. When that boss wouldn't give me my paycheck, you know, I remember I was just destitute. My mom and I were going to get kicked out of where we were living because I couldn't pay rent. And she ended up going back to Alaska, and I was like, I'm going to turn this around. And I don't know why. I was just very stubborn, like, I'm going to get another job. I'm going to get out of this car. And it was just a really hard cycle. I was having panic attacks. I started developing agoraphobia, which is a fear of leaving your home, which when you don't have a home is really hard. And I remember getting a gig as, like, a last resort. Like, maybe I can make money this way. Because I was sick so often, I had bad kidneys. I couldn't hold down a job because I was taking too many sick days and kept getting fired. And it was just this really vicious cycle. And I grew up singing with my dad in bars. You know, you did five-hour sets for a couple $100. And I was like, I could do that. But I didn't know any cover songs. And so I started writing a ton to try and get 5 hours worth of material because I thought that's what you should do. I didn't know people did hour and a half gigs, you know, when it was your own music. And it just, my life turned around. It was like the most transformative time, but it wasn't to get discovered. It wasn't to be get a record deal. It was just me saying, I'm either going to die at this moment in my life, or I'm going to figure out how to be happy and how to get my head right. And writing was my way of processing it. And holy shit, it turned into a career. And
yeah,
it's a crazy thing to look back on, you know, my mental state and where I was when that first record was made.
Just imagine if you were doing that now, if you were living in your car, like if you were living in a Tesla, that would be just fantastic. Like versus 25 years ago. I mean, because you have TV now in the car, you have, I mean, people
it's
like
a little different.
They live in.
Yeah. What kind of car was it? What kind of car was it, Jewel?
You know, a friend had given me a really crappy little Datsun 510 hatchback.
Ooh, those are thin seats.
I had to leave my key in it because the starter was so busted. So I would lay a towel over my steering wheel because that's not a sign that something's wrong with your ignition and your starter. Your key's probably there. It ended up getting stolen, and that's how I ended up on the street for a while until I could save up for another car.
Tell us about making that first record, because you really did it your way, and the decisions you made, honestly, for someone so young, working with Neil Young and making that record. Can you walk us through that? It had to be a little overwhelming.
Getting discovered was a trip. You know, I, you know, again, my goal was just like earn, I probably needed $1,200, $2,000 to get a down payment for first and last month's rent on an apartment. It was a trip. You know, San Diego was a big scene at the time. There were a lot of signings coming out of there, and I couldn't get a gig because every venue considered themselves a place to get signed for artists. And so you actually had to pay them a couple $100 because they considered themselves a venue for you to get signed. And I couldn't afford, like, wow. I didn't want that. I couldn't afford a couple $100. I needed somebody to pay me to sing. And so I found this coffee shop that was kind of going out of business. And I just was like, I have no following, but if you will just keep your doors open for 2 months, could we try and do this together? And would you let me keep all the door money? If I bring people in, I want the door money and you can keep the coffee and food money. And we shook on it. And I just set about like handing out flyers to surfers and, you know, anybody that would walk by. And my first show had two people. And I did a 5-hour show of the most emotionally like gut-wrenching songs that were 8 minutes long for five hours. And these two surfers sat there the entire time and we all were crying. Whoa. Like it was a trip. But the next Thursday they brought some friends, and the next Thursday they brought some friends, and it built up. And then after maybe 9 months, it was like standing room only, and people were standing in the rain outside watching me sing through the windows. I mean, it was just so touching, you know, again, because where I was coming from emotionally was just scared, lonely. I moved out at 15. I'd been hustling since I was 15. I always tried to stick up for myself and not be leveraged. And that's a scary thing to do because you don't know how it's going to work out. And there I was singing songs that I wrote that were honest and people cared. Again, getting signed was not in my framework. But that group of people became like a family. Like, I get chills talking about it. Like, they brought me food to eat, and they were just incredible. It was like being validated for who you authentically were when you spent most mm-hmm. of your life hiding it. And so when labels came, it was a trip, and I almost didn't sign, which sounds really weird for a homeless kid, but I had just started figuring out the fundamentals of being happy, which was figuring out how to be authentic. And I didn't think the music business was really conducive to that. And you take somebody with my emotional background, and God forbid I become famous. That's every TV movie you've ever seen about every musician. Yeah. It's like
Lifetime,
the worst stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to avoid it. And so I almost didn't sign a record deal, as weird as it sounds. But I ended up going on the beach in La Jolla and like having a huge heart to heart with myself. And I made myself two promises. Number one, that I would always make sure that my number one job that I had to take seriously and create a business plan for was how to be a happy person. Like, number two would be how to be a musician. And then I made myself the promise that I'd always choose music over fame. And so those became my two guiding principles, and it affected the bidding war. I ended up being in a bidding war. Every label suddenly wanted me, and I was offered $1 million to sign a record deal as a homeless kid. $1 million.
Well, who was helping you? Did you have a manager, or were you doing all the negotiations, or was it all you?
Yeah, I didn't have a manager at the time, but I read a book called Everything You Need to Know About the Music Business. I think it was Kassenheim, maybe.
And it worked.
A lot of people have read that book, yes.
Yeah, I read about mechanicals and royalties and backends, and I basically realized, you know, quickly that the money isn't a gift, it's a loan. Mm-hmm. And it's against recoupment. For me to sell enough records to recoup $1 million, that was going to be hard. I'm a folk singer at the height of grunge. And I mean, granted, there was a bidding war over me, but that doesn't mean jack. That does not mean it's going to translate into record sales just because a bunch of record execs got in an ego fight and wanted to beat each other to sign me. It wasn't about me. I didn't take it personal. So I turned down the $1 million and I took one of the biggest back ends anybody had ever received that would escalate as long as I kept achieving benchmarks. And by this time I did have a lawyer who's still my lawyer. And just told everybody, like, I'm a singer-songwriter at the height of grunge. I need people committed to me for the long haul because this isn't probably going to be pretty. This is going to be a grind. And I wanted a career like John Prine. That was my goal. I wasn't trying to be famous. I was trying to be a songwriter. And was given access to every amazing producer, but they all wanted to shorten my songs and shape them. And I didn't have a 3-minute song. The shortest song I had was probably 4.5 minutes. The rest were 6, 7, and 8 minutes. And so when I looked at that Neil Young record, it was, you know, obviously a singer-songwriter I admired. I saw Ben Keith's name on there and I was like, he seems to just let you be who you are and not change you. And I didn't want to change. I wanted to be honest. I wasn't that good. I wasn't that good of a guitar player. I had a ton of heart and a ton of emotion and that's pretty much what I had. And I wanted to showcase that, not let somebody else's production make me sound more, you know, experienced than I was. And so that's how we started out on that record.
But authenticity, what you said moments ago, is what usually pushes through in the end, especially like you said, at the height of grunge. I mean, they were spending Pearl Jam money to sign you, you know,
yeah.
Like, I mean, all those bands were just ridiculous because we were in the height of it at the same time also. But then there was this change and we started playing you. We started playing Sarah McLachlan. We started playing Lisa Loeb. Like there was this era where that stuff was all pushing to the top. And the Neil Young thing is fascinating, and people who don't have access to brilliance like that in music inspired a question for me to ask all of you. If you could meet, who have you not met that if you could meet anyone, like all your life you've had fame, fortune, access, but you've not met this person, who would it be?
That's a great question.
Dead or alive? Is it dead or alive?
Start with Jewel. No, alive.
Yeah, I would love to hear what
to be
Jewel
alive.
Has to say.
Yeah.
No, I was ready to hear your guys' answers so I could draft off of them.
Okay, Cubby, go ahead. Who would it be?
Mine's dead. I mean, Elvis Presley. I would have loved to have.
Yeah, of course.
Elvis Presley. But I'm trying to think. I mean, Bono maybe. I mean, I'm a big U2 fan. Never met Bono.
I would say, you know, I was able to briefly meet Paul McCartney, but I would love to have met John Lennon.
Wow.
Yeah, it's hard with living. Not that there's not great people living, but
right, right.
You know mine. Mine's
how about
easy.
You, Barnes?
Reese Witherspoon.
Really?
I keep it hard. Yeah, aww. I can't.
I was sticking with music though. I was sticking with music, but yeah.
Oh, no,
okay.
I was saying just anyone in the entertainment business that, I mean, we've all been in different ways, had a lot of access, and we've interviewed hundreds of people. Never Reese Witherspoon. For some reason, I'm fascinated by that, but we can't make it happen. So it's like.
And by the way, does Jewel know what your top five is? You always say Jewel is always one of my top fivers.
Oh,
does
yeah.
Jewel know what a top
Jewel needs
what a
to
top
know
fiver
about
is?
That.
Well, no, I mean, I used to say it on the air. I mean, Jewel probably walked out of the studio and I was like, okay, top five. I mean, you still look like you're 20, which is
because that's the kind of girl, and Jewel is the kind of girl you would have dated. Like she fits your quality of.
I married a Jewel.
Woman. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But
gotcha.
Who would yours be, Jewel? Like who would be the person if you could meet him? Like because you've probably met almost 98% of them just by the way of where you are.
Yeah, definitely.
Is there no one that stands out that you're like, I'd like to meet that person?
I was really lucky, you know, when my record was a failure for the first year and the label wanted to move off of the record, it hadn't done anything. And then Dylan took me out on the road and, you know, his manager was like, you won't meet him. You won't talk to him. He won't watch your shows. I was like, I get it. And after about 4 nights, his manager was like, you wouldn't believe it, but he wants to meet you. He's been checking your shows out. So I go down there, I'm struggling, you know, it's a good thing I didn't take the money because the record sold 2,000 copies in 12 months. It was brutal. And he liked my lyrics. He would go over my lyrics with me. He's like, what made you write this? Is that like a Merle Haggard reference? And which it was, and Who'll Save Your Soul is like so-called Social Security. You guys know that Merle Haggard line. There's a line like that in Who'll Save Your Soul, which was, I loved Merle. You know, I listened to Merle a ton growing up. And he caught that reference. He's the only one in history that's actually caught that reference. But wow. Having him like my music was like, man, if nobody else likes me, who cares? Like Bob Dylan believes in me. And he was like, you just keep going and you keep playing solo acoustic. And then I got to sing with him. Like he actually like called me out on stage and I went to the backup singer's mic to sing and he called me to his mic and I'm sharing a mic like this close with Bob Dylan. And I'm like, don't pass out. Just don't pass out. Just don't pass out. My whole goal was don't pass out. I don't think I sang very good, but I didn't pass out. So that's really good. But other influences, you know, Ella Fitzgerald taught me how to sing, not just her records. You know, I didn't get to meet her. And Sarah Vaughan, like her breath control. I've never heard anybody with Sarah Vaughan's breath control and her tone. So I think those two would be who I'd love to be able to time travel and meet.
That's a really incredible Bob Dylan story, by the way, and it says a lot about your songwriting. Yeah. And you talked a little bit about some advice or a little exchange you had with Neil Young at Madison Square Garden. Can you share that story? Because here you were opening up for Neil Young, and you're like solo acoustic. I am sure that had to be a little bit of a freak out at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, so after Dylan took me on the tour, I was like invigorated, and I kept working the first record, again, to no avail. And so I finally decided to kind of give up. Well, not kind of. Like, I went back in the studio and I started making a record in Bearsville. And then Neil Young asked me to tour with them. So I paused the record, came out on tour with them, and he was with Crazy Horse, you know, one of the most famous rock bands ever, walls of Marshall amps. And we're doing our gig. And he was also, again, just this real mentor. I was like, you know, Neil, I haven't gotten on radio. Like, it isn't working. And he's like, F radio, F the press, F everything. You're a singer-songwriter. You're not a pop star. Like, it's a different gig to be a singer-songwriter, and you have to commit to this lifestyle because you may never get it. And it's like, you can't worry about that. You can't try and make other people happy. You have to do what you think is right. And Neil and Bob both really drilled that in my head, that taking on that mantle of singer-songwriters, it's just a different commitment. It's just a different way, and you just might have to suck it up your whole life. And when I was doing Madison Square Garden, I must have looked green. I was very nervous. And he looked at we ran across each other in the green room. He's like, "What's the matter? You look nervous." You know, he's an intimidating guy. He's kind of grumpy and shaky. And I was like, I was kind of uncharacteristically like, I was like, "Yeah, I am nervous." He goes, "Why are you so nervous?" And I was like, "Because you're Neil Young with Crazy Horse. And I'm solo acoustic at Madison Square Garden. And they're going to kill me." Like, I was so like, I was like visibly like, holy shit. And he got his finger in my face and he goes, "This is just another hash house on the road to success. You get out there and you show them no respect." And I was like, "Sir, yes, sir."
What year was this?
I don't. It's funny. I get chill bumps talking about it. I don't really know. Yeah, I have no idea.
97.
Only because I remember. Before.
Oh, yeah. Before.
Well, I remember.
Yeah.
When I was working at Z100, Jewel, we had a jingle ball, and we called it "Girls Rule the Yule," because your music kind of sparked so much of this female power. And I don't know if you remember, it was you, Melissa Etheridge, No Doubt, Sarah McLachlan, Sean Colvin, Sheryl Crow, Tracy Chapman. I don't know if you remember that. I think that might have been the first time. That was December of 96 when you played The Garden. I don't know
this
if you remember
would have
that.
This would have been before that for sure.
Wow. Okay.
I wasn't famous yet. When I toured with Bob and Neil, I don't know. Thank God they took me under their wing, because that record was like I said, the first record failed and I was making a second record when I went out with Neil. So we'd given up on Who'll Save Your Soul. We'd given up on You're Meant For Me. We tried for over a year on both those songs to be laughed out of radio. Like, I can't even tell you, like, oh my God, I was opening for goth bands and opening for the Ramones and opening for Bauhaus and Peter Murphy. And, you know, shock jocks was the thing. Everybody was trying to imitate Howard. So I'd get on a radio station and be like, "How do you give a blowjob with those teeth?" And you're like,
Oh my gosh.
Right.
You know,
yep.
I did remember, a radio show down the South, and they're like, you may have heard me describe my next guest as a large-breasted woman from Alaska. Jewel, how are you? And I was like, you must be a small penis man. Awful. I've heard so much about from South Carolina. And I was kicked out of this. I was kicked out of so many radio stations before I ever got to you guys. Like, I just, my label was like, please just keep your trap shut. And I was like, I can't. I was not taught to take it or eat it in my life. Like, that's not how I roll.
Well, you were working against yourself because back then you had to have radio.
You did.
I mean, you had to get that pop star thing or whatever star.
Yeah, you did. And, you know, so I just kept giving it back to the guys that, you know, would give it to me. And I kept getting kicked out of stations. So
funny.
Yeah, the record, luckily, you know, when I was touring with Neil, things started to pop during that tour. It was kind of this tide shift. And then Neil, I think Conan put me on TV, and that was like a thing. And then John Sykes put me on VH1. And that started to change the tides, you know, with Who'll Save Your Soul and thing. I went back to that first record and we just punched it through. But I think it took a year and a half, maybe 2 years on that record.
So what was the moment when you walked outside and you thought, oh, wow, people know who I am? Like, not what triggered it, but do you remember the moment? Like, were you walking out of a specific hotel or were you walking out of, and you're like, holy shit, this is real?
When I got on the cover of Time, you know, it was years after that record came out, but it was still on that record. And having just eaten shit for so many, you know, years, being told you can't do it. You're singing about being sensitive. You talk about angels, you know, like the press really, really disliked me. I was so earnest at the height of when cynical was cool. And that the headline, I can't remember what it said, but it was something like macho is out and empathy is in. And it was my face on Time magazine. And it was just like, it was one of those moments where you're like, suck it, world. Like, I did it, you know, like, and I stayed sensitive and I did it my way. And to see that tide shift, and now that females, you know, not that I was the only one that helped that tide shift, but that tide shift was like, whoo, we fought for that.
How was it working with all of those females during Lilith Fair? Because it was a moment in time, and I wish it would just, something like that would come back, because women are still not getting their due at terrestrial radio, unfortunately, especially in the country space.
Do it, Leslie.
We do. We need another modern day Lilith Fair. And I remember seeing you a couple of different Lilith Fair shows.
Yeah. You know, it was, you know, hard for all of us in the 90s. You know, radio doesn't want to play more than two. You won't play women back to back in an hour block. For you to fight your way as a woman into that top 10 is really hard, because they'll only let a couple women usually in that top 10. And I don't know that it's changed a ton. You still won't hear a ton of women back to back, whereas you'll always hear men back to back. But I think a lot of that has to do, you know, with what we expect of ourselves as women. You know, I never felt held back because I was a woman. It was something I had to solve for, maybe. But I think that talent fixes a lot of shit. And you have to focus on being talented and never... I'd rather not be famous, right? I'd rather be a musician. And so you keep your focus on the quality of your work, and you do what you're comfortable with. And I do think a lot of women, more than men, although it happens with men so much, a lot of people want to be liked, and you want to be cute, and you want to be accepted more than you want to ferociously be yourself. And, you know, country historically has some of the boldest, baddest women in all of music. I mean, you look at Loretta Lynn, and Loretta Lynn, let's just like, I have an altar in my house to Loretta Lynn. She wrote, you know, the Pill. I know that isn't the title of the song, but I'm not thinking of it. It's a radical punk rock song. You know, punk rock is the unapologetic desire to be yourself. And that was Loretta. And that was a lot of women in country in that era. There were just some badass women. And in pop too, you know, in singer-songwriters, there were some badass women in the 60s that were ferociously themselves. As soon as you start trying to be liked more than you try and be yourself, you're going to be deeply compromised. And for some reason, I see that more with women in music a little bit. I saw so many posers in the 90s of guys. Don't get me wrong. But I think women tend to get lauded for their looks and they want to be popular. And so they maybe make music that isn't as artistic. But, you know, that's why I love seeing Miranda Lambert come on the scene in country, is she was just herself. You know, and the Dixie Chicks were themselves. We need more women who want to be themselves more than they want to be popular. Because if you're going to let a label put songs on you, it's just never going to be that interesting. And you might even be popular, but it's not that interesting. And so you're not going to break through. And I think country actually demands their women, especially, to be themselves. A lot of guys are getting on the radio in country that aren't, I don't know, it's not that interesting. It's not like that singer-songwriter country thing like Merle and, you know, those greats. But they're getting by with it a lot, with a lot less onus. The women seem to have a much higher standard, which is kind of good, you know? And so if any women are watching, like, write your songs, write about what makes you angry and what makes you happy, and trust that there will be people to support that perspective if it's good.
I want to go back to one more question about when you got started. I was looking at the Atlantic Records roster in 1995. Was their roster kind of a decision factor for you on if you'd sign with Atlantic? Because they had like all these hits. They had Hootie and the Blowfish, Collective Soul, Edwin McCain, Jamie Walters, Everything But the Girl. Did their roster
affect
your decision making?
Look at the 93 roster. I was signed in 93, believe it or not.
Oh, you were signed in 93. Right. 95, you exploded. Okay, let me look at 93.
Or 96. But anyway, no, I don't think I looked at the roster. I just was dealing with people. You know, like I'd met Tommy Mottola and he and I weren't necessarily a fit. Danny Goldberg was at Atlantic and he had signed Nirvana and, you know, like Bonnie Raitt. And he kind of had huevos as far as signing real artists went, it seemed. And they're the ones that gave me the deal with the back end that I was looking for. And when I looked them in the eye, even though Danny, you know, became one of those classic, you know, CEOs that went label to label, golden parachuting around. He wasn't there long. But, you know, when I looked him in the eyes and was like, I'm an artist. Am I going to be okay? You know, he said, yeah. And I found my champions in Atlantic. And, you know, working a label system is its own art. You know, it could be its own show of what artists need to do at labels to keep, you know, people engaged in you and caring, because there's 600 artists and there's people vying right for the same marketing budget.
What's it like living in Alaska, Jewel?
You know, the way I was raised was beautiful. My family are homesteaders. They pioneered the state in the late, early 40s. We, you know, only had creek water. We didn't have running water. We only ate what we could kill or can. We had an outhouse. And when I came on the scene, you know, on the pop side, nobody could understand it. They even would just sort of make fun of it. And I don't know why. I do find like each East and West Coast press tends to make fun of like rural lifestyles, which is bizarre to me. But once my family's show came out, Alaska, The Last Frontier, it's been out for maybe 11 or 12 years now. It was like people could really see how I was raised and where I was raised and the beauty in that lifestyle that isn't ranching it isn't ranching. It's, you know, homesteading's different. And I remember when I went into the country genre, again, it was starting over. And I was in Florida. I won't say where or what station, but a lot of the stations wouldn't even let me in. Like they made me sit in the lobby and they wouldn't let me even come in to talk. Or they would just even kind of try to humiliate me and be like, you can sing in the lobby, you know? And you're like, and I don't know why I get off on that. I guess you have to keep switching genres, but I'd be like, no problem. You know what I mean? But I remember sitting in this program director's office in a country station, and I knew him from the pop world, by the way. So, but going from pop into country is really, it's controversial. And as it, you know, country's been country for a long time, forever, and it's been good. And it's been made fun of so much, and it becomes fashionable and unfashionable to be country. So I actually really deeply understand and the cynicism of when somebody wants to come into country. Like I totally get that. And that's why I didn't mind at all. But I remember this guy who came from pop. So apparently it's okay for program directors to come over, just not the artists. And I'm vocal about what I think clearly, but I remember sitting in his office and he had his arms crossed. He goes, so what makes you country? And I'm thinking in my head, like, I know you from the pop world, so I don't even know how to start on this. But B, I grew up eating squirrel stew. Like, What did you grow up with? Like, what makes you country? Like, I know what I am. Like, I don't need like a PD to tell me if I'm country or not. So it was just, yeah, funny.
Being from Alaska, are you a complete salmon snob? Like, do you have to be like at the best? You must like just get the best salmon, you know, like you grew up around, and then you come to the stage where you have these like little cubes of
nothing,
squished ugliness.
You probably catch your own
salmon.
Yeah. I grew up, we'd set out a subsistence net and catch 75 king salmon in a tide, you know, but those days are gone. We've overfished all of our oceans. And it's what we do to our food is so gross. You know, I like meat, I'm a carnivore, but you know, when you raise your cattle or you eat game, it's very healthy. And it's hard. You understand the value of taking a life and how hard it is. It's nothing you do lightly. We're so disconnected from our food. Ugh.
What does squirrel stew taste like?
I don't like squirrel. Squirrel's gross. It's your last resort when the freezer's empty. Ugh. I really don't like it. It's gristly and really gross.
Jewel, you said this a couple of times in the interview today, but you came out to an event for me at CMT in 2014 with our Next Women of Country event, and it is tough for women in country music, but you gave one of the most empowering, inspiring, moving speeches to that audience. And I remember after getting calls from all of these managers of female artists going, I have to have a copy of this speech that Jewel gave. It's so important, because you did talk about make a decision. Are you an artist or do you want to be a celebrity? And you've been able to distinguish between the two. And I do feel for a lot of artists today because of social media.
Yeah, but you know, social media, again, is just how you use it. And the most important thing is we make 5 million decisions every day, all of us in our careers. Anybody that's hustling is making a lot of decisions every day. And you kind of have to know what you're making a decision for. And if you don't ask yourself first what you want, as an artist especially, it's very important, you're going to be making very willy-nilly decisions. And sometimes it's going to be great for art, and sometimes it can be great for fame, and sometimes it's great for both. But you have to have that North Star. I make decisions because. And then it makes it really clear when you're given an opportunity. A really good example was I was making my first record. So this is 94, maybe 93 even. And The Real World was it had its first season. It was the very first reality show. I didn't know what it was. It wasn't very popular yet. But my label came to me. They were starting their second season, and they said, there's this new thing where like we put cameras in houses and we watch people and you will get famous. We will record the record live on, you know, on camera. You'll be watched on national television going from homeless to making your record. And it's pretty much a guaranteed home run. You'll be famous. And I turned it down because it didn't fit my goal of being an artist and being from agriculture. Hardwood grows slowly. There's no shortcut in nature. So if nature doesn't have a shortcut, I better not try one, because it isn't sustainable. Otherwise, nature would have figured out how to make shortcuts. Hardwood grows slowly, and I wanted the long term. I'm still that way. I want a 60-year career. I want to be remembered as one of the best singer-songwriters of all time. That's not something you're given overnight. You got to keep doing good work. It's hard. It's a hard goal. And you got to put the time in, and there's just no shortcut. So I turned it down. And I remember my label being like,
that was Real World specifically? That was Real World, not something like it, but that was the actual Real World?
No, that was the actual TV show. Wow. And that season blew up, by the way. That was their San Francisco season.
Oh, San Francisco with Puck.
I guess. I mean, again, I didn't watch it. I just know that I turned it down.
Well, that was a smart move.
Yes.
I guess so. You know, but there were years. There were years where those people were famous, and I was, you know, about to get dropped by my label. Wow. So just those little critical decisions. Don't take the money. Stay away from the reality show. But you have to be willing for it not to work. You have to be willing to be like, all right, I'm a singer-songwriter. Nobody knows me. Like, you have to
live
with that.
I've never heard that story before. Have you told that story before?
No, I haven't.
I can't believe that you were pitched to be on The Real World. That would have been the biggest disaster choice. Because when you look back, they're famous for minutes, not years. I mean, it really is fast.
Yeah, but again, that's hindsight's great. Hindsight makes you look brilliant. at the dawn of a new genre, when it's like, holy shit, it's a, and it was a huge opportunity, and it, it would have worked, but I would have been famous for the wrong reason and not for the right reason. And so it's those types of things that, like, the whole industry was telling me, you got to do this. This is a freaking no brainer. Everybody was saying it. And I'm like, it doesn't feel right. You know, it's hard to be an artist. You have to say, these are my values. I live my life according to these values, and I don't compromise. And when I do, I notice it and go, ooh, that didn't feel good. And I redirect myself. Artists have to do that. And managers have to, like, if I was a manager, I'd be sitting down going, tell me your core values. And we're going to make decisions based on that. And that's going to be your map. This is how you navigate the forest of a really difficult business. And life, frankly, for everybody. I do it with my son.
Jewel, when's some new music? We need some.
Yeah, I'm making a record right now. I've thought it was so strange that with all the political upheaval in the last 10 years, I thought punk rock would be coming back, folk music would be coming back.
True.
And it doesn't seem to be happening. And it actually is what made me decide to make a mainstream record again. I've been making indie records on the side because I'm a mom. And so I decided to take a swing at it. This record has more of a soul feel. Again, I seem to be switching genres a little bit, pushing myself vocally. There's a song called No More Tears you could look up, and you'll kind of see where my singing's at and where my writing's at.
And congratulations on the 25th anniversary of Pieces of You. What a trip down memory lane of such a seminal record. And, you know, even at the time you were getting compared to like Joni Mitchell. So it's, that record is just one of the best, again, I said it earlier, of our generation.
Well, thanks. It's a trip to see that little record was able to do what it did. And
unbelievable.
On my website, I did a show where I sang the album top to bottom. I've never done it. And so it was really fun. And on my website, you can still go see that show.
That's over what? It's over 10 million in the US, right? I mean,
I think
that
it was 12 in the US and maybe 15 or 16 worldwide.
And Jewel, something else you're doing. Would that be one of your necklaces you're wearing around your neck?
Why, thank you for asking. Yes.
Oh, yes.
I love jewelry, and I do mindfulness. A lot of the exercises I invented when I was homeless were actually proven to rewire your brain by a neuroscientist named Dr. Brewer. And they're up on a free website. It's a charitable website. If anybody just wants to learn about anxiety and how to solve for it, it's jewelneverbroken.com. But I started making jewelry as like a, you know, like rosary beads to remind myself to stay grounded in whatever I was working on. So I developed an entire line based on different principles and values. It's at songlinesbyjewel.com.
That's incredible. So it's like best-selling author Jewel.
And designer, Leslie.
And designer.
What guest has been this coordinated? Look at that background. Look at the whole thing.
It's unbelievable.
Like, she came to play.
I'm not huge scale. It's literally me and my best friend and two other women. Like our little, it's four of us that make all this by hand. So I didn't do like a big licensing deal again, like most celebrities would do. Like we just make it by ourselves here, and it's a tiny company, but it has a lot of heart and I love doing it.
What's the company called?
It's called Songlines by Jewel.
And when you have new music out, we would love to have you come back on and talk to us.
Yeah, I'd love it. I'd love to sing for you guys. You know, like I said, my goal of I want to be one of the best singers and I want to be one of the best singer-songwriters. And I wrote 200 songs for this new album to get 10 I liked. It was so hard as a middle-aged artist to get out of your head and not think about radio and not think about who you've been and find something authentic. I see why middle-aged artists do lots of drugs.
Your career has been just beyond impressive, and you keep doing new things and keep changing up, but it always works. I mean, you just, it's pretty unbelievable.
It's
She's
funny
a real
looking
artist.
Back, you know, like when I did that pop record, I don't know if you guys remember, but it pissed people off so bad because coming out of the 90s.
I asked you about that, about Intuition. I talked to you about a month ago and we talked about Intuition, and I had no idea that the label was actually kind of mad about that song.
The label wasn't actually, and I've always turned in records sight unseen. Like they've always just let me go in the studio and hand in records. And I let them know, I was like, I'm going to do a pop record. Like I'm going to write a full on pop record. And they're like, all right, let's do it. I mean, they were just used to me, but it was the press that really was like, you can't be a singer songwriter. You're sellout now. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Cause I think being a sellout is doing You Were Meant For Me 0.3, 0.4, because that's what I'm expected to do. So it was a very fascinating thing. I know what you're thinking about. I think you're thinking about when like Geffen sat me down, he wasn't my label. So I was asked to like come into the meet, I think it was Geffen. I kind of get some of those big guys confused, but I went into his office. I thought maybe he wanted me to write for somebody else because he was, I'm not his artist. I'm not on his label. And so I came in and he sits me down and I can tell I'm in trouble. Like, I felt like I got called into the principal's office and like, I'm a little kid. I'm like, the vibe's very weird in here. I sit down, he pulls up a chair pretty close right across from me. He goes, he doesn't say hi. He doesn't say shit. He goes, nobody wants this generation's Joni Mitchell to wear a miniskirt. You knock it the fuck off.
I was like, wow.
That's right. That's
strong
right.
Feelings. Like, whoa.
Wow.
Dang, there's yeah. a nice quote.
Yeah, it was a trip. That record was a trip. But I, you know, in hindsight, you know, I love it. I love that record. And I love the songs I wrote on that thing. So it's been fun. It's
You did look great in that video. You look great in that video, by the way.
Right on. yeah, it's been fun. And, you know, any artist listening or watching, like, the only person that'll put you in a box is yourself. Like, just give yourself permission to do what you want and put your whole heart into it. And it may not work out right away, but over the course of life, it should always work out. And you won't always make everybody happy, so you might as well make yourself happy.
Congratulations on all your success, and we really appreciate you coming on the Pop Culture Show.
Yeah, really fun. So nice to see all of you. Really, really
You're
fun
so
to see
inspiring,
all of you.
Jewel. Thank you so much.
You really are.
Yeah,
well,
thank you, Jewel.
Appreciate it. It's nice to see all
you
of
you. Should
your
be a motivational
faces.
Speaker.
She is a motivational speaker. She is. So
yeah, you really are. I mean, seriously.
All right, on. Thanks,
Have
guys.
Have a wonderful holiday. Thank you.
All right, I'll see y'all.
The Pop Culture Show brought to you by Luna Nuda Prosecco. Cheers with Luna Nuda.